You're listening to Vatican Radio. Prayers for victims of the fighting in Ukraine and for those suffering from the conflict in South Sudan were at the top of the agenda as the Catholic bishops of England and Wales met for their plenary assembly in the northern city of Leeds this week. At a press conference on Friday, the president of the Bishops' Conference, Cardinal Vincent Nichols, also called on Catholics to pray for Christian unity and for the success of Pope Francis's forthcoming visit to the Holy Land, where he'll meet with Orthodox leader Patriarch Bartholomew of Constantinople. Among many other issues discussed by the bishops at their meeting was the ongoing debate in the UK around legalising assisted suicide and ways in which the Catholic Church will be marking the centenary of the First World War. The church leaders also looked back at the recent conference in the Vatican on combating human trafficking, as well as forward to the Synod of Bishops on the Family, which will take place here in Rome in October. To find out more, I spoke with Cardinal Nichols just before the press conference on Friday. Cardinal Nichols, you met with a nuncio, didn't you, who raised the alarm about proposed legislation in the UK on assisted dying. And although this is an area the Church has always spoken out very strongly on, you've got a new statement, I believe, coming out.
Yes, we do. It's a very simple statement. It reaffirms the Catholic conviction that human life has its intrinsic value. And we quote Pope Francis in some of his memorable phrases. And we salute those who care for the elderly and the most vulnerable, as well as stating our opposition to any legislative move towards assisted suicide, because that's what it is.
This is a very emotive issue, a very sensitive issue, isn't it? One that the secular press talks about a lot. Do you feel that the Church's voice is being heard as this legislation is going through Parliament?
Well, we have to wait and see what the legislation looks like. And obviously there is an ongoing debate, and on the whole those who propose support for assisted suicide do so on the basis of personal choice. I think we oppose it on the grounds that actually we belong to each other and the decisions of one person influence not only their family and their wider circle of friends, but also the wider community. It's a long-established truth. Shakespeare put it very simply when he said, no man is an island. And I think the proponents of some of this legislation suggest that indeed a person is an island and therefore is free to make whatever choice they want.
Looking a bit more broadly, we heard the Prime Minister David Cameron raising a bit of a storm just recently when he talked about Britain needing to be more confidently Christian. Were you surprised, first of all, about the kind of reaction he received, the backlash he received?
Well, I think we should pay attention to the response he received, and it was one of widespread support from many religious leaders, leaders of different religions. So it wasn't as if it was simply a Christian and secular response. It wasn't. It was people who understand the importance of living a life in the presence of God and of how that enriches our human endeavour. All of those people were ready to acknowledge that in its foundations, in its culture, and in the hearts of the majority of people, it is the Christian faith that shapes our way of life. Some loud voices in opposition were raised, and I think the most interesting comment was to point out that some of those secular voices are the most intolerant voices in our community.
Cynics, of course, would say he's just trying to score political points from Christian voters. But are these kinds of comments helpful to the Church as a whole, do you think, or not?
Oh, I think the comments of a politician, and that, you know, politicians make many comments. I think it's important that we get on and live our life of faith robustly and confidently.
Going back to the meeting in Leeds there, you've been reviewing, haven't you, the recent trafficking conference that took place here in the Vatican last month. How are you planning to build to go forward from that meeting?
Well, I think one of the remarkable achievements and strengths of the meeting that took place in the Holy See was that all the senior police officers present from 24 different countries signed an undertaking to see themselves, in their own description, as the Santa Marta Group, and to keep in touch and work towards a further conference, bringing them all together again with the representatives of the church, especially of religious women, in the autumn here in London. And that will take place. And the preparations for that conference are beginning, and they are a very important partnership between the Home Office, so the British government, the Metropolitan Police, and the Catholic Church in England and Wales. So that's a very significant partnership, and one that we would like to see replicated in other parts of the world.
Certainly this issue seems to be something of a priority for Pope Francis too, doesn't it? Which must give a lot of added impetus to the work that you're doing.
Well, those who gave an account of the conference, you know, said that one of the most remarkable and dramatic moments was when Pope Francis came to the Academia and gave us the grace of his presence. It was very important to those who were there as victims of trafficking, and it was very important to the participants. Indeed, we were told that one of the victims had been saying beforehand that since she was released from her captivity and slavery, she'd never really had a night's sleep. But now, she said, I have a picture of Pope Francis by the side of my bed, and I talk to him every night, and he speaks to me, and I sleep well.
Very touching testimony. Moving on, there's another statement, I understand, coming out from this Leeds meeting on the way the Catholic Church is going to be commemorating the start of the First World War, part of the nationwide commemorations that will be going on throughout the year and beyond.
Yes, that's right. I mean, clearly, the feature that violent conflict has in human history is something that we must always reckon with and always remember and always commemorate in the right and proper way. And what is widely acknowledged is that the major Catholic contribution to these commemorations is that we pray for those who died, that we know that this is a very, very important duty on us as Catholics and Christians, and that those who died are helped by our prayers. So we have given a public undertaking that on each of the major commemorative days, which spread from 2014 to 2018, bishops will celebrate masses for the dead, a requiem mass in their cathedrals on or near these dates. So the first of them is the entry of the British Empire into this great war on the 4th of August 2014. And then there are anniversary dates commemorating the campaign Gallipoli and the Battle of Jutland, commemorating the war at sea in June 2016. In July 2016, the Battle of the Somme. In July 2017, the start of the Third Battle of Ypres, and then the 11th of November 2018, Armistice Day. So bishops will commemorate requiem masses on or about those days. And we are also asking Catholic parishes to mark these important anniversaries on the nearest Sunday by offering mass for all those who died, and to pray in the intercessions for those currently serving in the armed forces, and to pray for peace.
This is about remembering the past, the sacrifice made by those in the past, but it's also, in a sense, about educating future generations, isn't it, as to exactly what happened and how to stop such a thing really happening again?
Well, I think it is precisely that. It's to help people to recognise the sacrifice, the self-sacrifice that many made. So suggestions emerged, for example, of Catholic parishes asking their primary school children to study the war memorials and to trace the history of some of the names of the fallen that are recorded on those war memorials. I'm asking some of our historians to look into the story of the priests of this diocese who served as chaplains in the First World War. And so in that sense, to give a very human feel to these moments of commemoration, to salute the heroism of those who contributed to the military effort. And then, of course, we also remember those who acted in many, many of the support services. And, of course, you know, these war efforts changed the whole fabric of our societies, this one and, of course, the Second World War. And so we are shaped by these terrible events. And, as you say, we see them repeated in other parts of the world. So particularly, for example, during the conference, we were very distressed to learn of the most recent violence in South Sudan, and the bombing of a hospital in South Kordofan, a hospital which is there, the only functioning hospital in the Nuba Mountains, serving 150,000 people annually, and this hospital has been bombed and no attention is given to it. So we would very much like to draw attention to that and to the support needed in our prayers by the people there and the Bishop Emeritus, Bishop Gassi, who has made the major statement calling the world's attention to this latest act of violence in South Sudan.
You're absolutely right, though. These events gain very little attention in the mainstream press. What else can you do to try and push them up the agenda, if you like?
Well, I think it's by telling the story and by, you know, letting people know the effective help that we try to bring to the people in their need, and to try and maintain our sense of the almost continual presence of conflict within our human family, and to look to those who are its victims and to look to those who are its perpetrators, and to try always to work for resolution.
One final question. You've also been looking at a significant rise in vocations there, haven't you, to the church in the UK? And I'm wondering what you think perhaps is the main factor behind that.
Well, you know, I think it's probably two things. One is the work to foster a culture of vocations within the Catholic community. And Father Christopher Jameson, the director of our Catholic Church's National Office of Vocation, does great work in this. And I think the other thing is that despite all the things that people might read in the press, the vocation to be a priest or to be a member of a religious order is attractive. Young people, not so young people, come forward and say, that's a way of life I want to explore for me myself. And what we see is the generosity and idealism of many young and middle-aged people in this country at this time. And they look at the role of the priest, they look at the role of the religious sister, and they say, that is a generous and a satisfying and a very, very positive way of giving service in my life and of growing in a fundamental relationship with the Lord. So I think it does speak of the vibrancy of the Catholic community and of our confidence, despite all the difficulties that we also face.
Is it possible to talk about a Francis effect yet, or is it really too early to think along those lines?
Well, you know, I think if we look at the figures, we will see that the recent peak in vocations predates Pope Francis. There's no doubt that Pope Francis is giving the church a fresh look. People are seeing the church in quite different eyes. But our growth in vocations does predate that, and I think is also related to the visit of Pope Benedict to this country, in which he came across in a most positive and wonderful way.
My thanks there to Cardinal Vincent Nicholls of Westminster, President of the Bishops' Conference of England and Wales.